Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today as we begin by talking about the visionary environment of Tom Every. And the man to tell us about Tom Every is Tom Kupch of Cazenovia, Wisconsin, who's written an account of the great metal artist called A Mythic Obsession, The World of Dr. Evermore, and it's published by Chicago Review Press. More about that at IPG.com. And Tom, thank you very much for coming in and sharing the story with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Real pleasure. Tom Every, or Dr. Evermore, as he has become known, is known worldwide. His sculpture, especially his Forevertron, has been featured in countless newspaper and magazine articles here and abroad, a celebrity in the world of self-taught artists. And you met Tom Every more than 30 years ago when he was still forming an artistic voice, I believe.
Yes. Tom and I both worked at the House on the Rock for Alex Jordan back in the 70s. We never worked together. However, I got to know him fairly well then, but I hadn't seen him for more than 20 years when I started the book.
Mm-hmm. What do you recall about him back at the House on the Rock?
Well, he made a giant contribution out there, working with Alex Jordan to create the Organ Room. Now, the Organ Room is a mechanical fantasy in which Tom put together huge equipment and salvage from his industrial salvage work, along with Alex, and created a whimsical mechanical fantasy out there. It was Alex who told him one day, he said, "You know, Tom, there's a great artist inside of you struggling to get out."
And so then Tom, of course, had to let that artist get out.
He certainly did.
Well, let's start at the beginning. And if you'd like to join us along the way, the number for you in Madison is 263-1890 or toll free at 800-642-1234. Tom was born in Madison September 20th, 1938, so he'll be celebrating his 70th birthday next month.
That's right.
And lived on the Near East Side at Shanks Corners, right next to the Union House Tavern. When Tom was 8, the family moved to Brooklyn and took up residence in the old grandparents' place. And Tom had apparently at that point developed a lifelong need to bring everything that he could find home.
That's right. Tom is he has a collection disease. He calls it the disease of all. He has to collect everything. And before he was 14 years old, he collected enough scrap metal to fill a rail car, which he had taken away and got the profits from that. He eventually collected so much stuff that it became apparent to his parents that he would have to move his stuff somewhere else. So he found a vacant lot onto which he started to move his stuff and went on from there. He became an industrial salvager much later and collected on a truly grand scale.
At one point, you've got a picture. You've got many pictures of the early days, including this pickup truck that he had modified. It has buy, sell, or trade, see Trader Tom, anything, anytime, anywhere, in a sign that along each side of the back end of the truck.
Yeah, as soon as Tom was able to drive, the first thing he did was get a truck that would carry his stuff around and put the sign on it, and he would take anything, anywhere, anytime. And he used that truck. One of the first excursions was to go down to Oklahoma, where he had heard about a vast antique auction. He had really not much been out of the state. And that was an eye-opening experience to him, telling him how much profit could be made, how much was available on a national scale in terms of industrial or other kind of collecting. He had one time bought a collection of 50,000 salt and pepper shakers, for example, and on from there.
Our guest is Tom Kupch, who's the author of A Mythic Obsession, The World of Dr. Evermore, published by Chicago Review Press. Tom Every has created hundreds of whimsical welded sculptures, including the Forevertron, which eclipses everything in sight at the Evermore Sculpture Park outside of Baraboo, Wisconsin, on Highway 12. When they moved to Brooklyn, one of the shop owners there, Cyril Graves, let Tom store inventory in the back of his shop, and that's where he sort of got into the business of collecting stuff. He never referred to it as junk, did he?
No, it's not junk. It's scrap to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he did run across in his life, or he did charm people into allowing him to store his stuff, his scrap, on their properties. And he, when he was young, seemed to have a way to charm people, to charm adults, who would then help him along the way. He also was very friendly with the station master, the train station master there, which helped him ship away his goods and also import some illegal fireworks, which he sold. But certainly, Mr. Graves was a great help to him in the beginning, allowing him to store there and to build on things and get him started.
Then he meets Eleanor, is it Gittenholm?
Yes, Gittenholm.
Gittenholm was her maiden name of Stoughton, a forager in her own right. It was only destined that they meet.
It seemed that way. Eleanor had a little red wagon, and her favorite thing to do was to go to the Stoughton dump. Now, dumps were a lot different in those days. They were sort of recycling centers in a different way, unused things and so forth. Eleanor was fond of going up there with her little wagon and hauling things back to the house. Eventually, her folks had to put an end to it when she started hauling large pieces of furniture. But they seemed to be made for each other in terms of their fascination with scrap and its reuse.
We're talking about Tom Every, otherwise known as Dr. Evermore. And they marry in 1964, have four children, move into Madison, where he ends up in the Highlands, one of the most prestigious areas of the city.
He certainly did. Ended up in what was then the largest house in Madison. It's still standing up there. And they lived there for a period of time, about a decade, until things went fairly bad for them, and they lost that house. A tragic thing for the family in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm. And one day in 1950, at a Badger boxing match at the UW Field House, Tom sees Alex Jordan box. And that's the first time that he sees him, and they strike up a friendship.
Well, at that time, he was just a kid with his dad out for a sport evening. And he didn't meet him then, but he would meet him later, but did remember Alex boxing as a heavyweight that night. So that was the first time he saw him. Later on, he would go out in the 60s trying to deal Alex out of a unique custom car that he had. He never succeeded in doing that, but eventually developed a trade relationship with him in which Tom would scour the country for artifacts and things that Alex might use at the House on the Rock. And that's how their relationship developed. Eventually, well, they would travel all over the country, actually, visiting attractions.
Mm-hmm. And Alex had a rather severe car accident, which meant that he and Tom then grew even closer because Tom was his then mode of transportation.
Yeah, Alex was a fairly fast driver, and one day on Highway 14 on his way to and from House on the Rock, he broadsided a horse. A lot of people didn't expect him to survive the experience. There was a long convalescence during which Tom visited him and they talked about the future and collecting. Alex had gone through a period of depression at the time because he was a man of action who liked to do things, and this had made him sort of an invalid. But he eventually recovered, and their friendship grew closer.
We're talking with Tom Kupsch of Cazenovia, Wisconsin, who's written an account of Tom Every, known otherwise as Dr. Evermore. It's called A Mythic Obsession, The World of Dr. Evermore, published by Chicago Review Press. If you have questions about Dr. Evermore, Tom Every, or the works that he has done, or the book itself, why, you can give us a call in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. At some point, the myth of Dr. Evermore was created and then has been expanded on ever since. But basically, if you understand the myth, then you can understand some of what happens then later on, correct?
That's right. The myth that Tom created is central to a lot of the rest of his creation. He was going through a difficult period of life in the 80s, and he decided to escape reality and take refuge in creativity. So he conjured up a myth, the myth of Dr. Evermore. He invented a fictional 19th century ancestor named Dr. Evermore, who also wanted to escape the world and decided to create a machine, which he called the Forevertron, which would propel him into the celestial spheres. The fictional ancestor had designed and built this machine, and Tom took on the name of Dr. Evermore and decided to recreate what he fictionally thought was this machine. And the results of this is the Forevertron and the satellite pieces, which are up at the sculpture site. It's 5.5 stories high, 120 feet long, 85 feet wide, and weighs tons and tons. There are satellite pieces and other pieces which seem to serve the Forevertron, which are scattered around the vast sculpture park up there. And the myth has a logic to it, if you can call it logic, in which the machinery that Tom incorporated into it could work the way he says, or should work the way he says. But it's all united in a special logic that Tom has.
The auxiliary pieces, I know that in the book they're outlined, and they do serve ancillary purposes, where you've got music to propel him, and different, I don't know what you would call them, different pieces of art, I guess.
Yes.
Which also sort of amplify the purpose of the mission.
They all do have a special purpose. So the bird band is the band that would be entertaining or sending the doctor off on his way heavenward when the Forevertron blasts off. It's made up of birds which are constructed out of scrap metal, and incorporated into them are musical instruments. It was inspired by a Civil War reenactment band that Tom very much enjoyed.
And that's out of Broadhead, Wisconsin, isn't it?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay.
Some of the other pieces, for example, the Albert Melantine. The Albert Melantine is a truck designed and built by a fellow cut from the same cloth as Tom, Albert Melantine, who lived in the 50s, and he was a seat-of-the-pants inventor. This is a machine which was the heaviest machine for lifting things off the road during its day. The State Patrol would often call him to pick trucks off the road. And like Tom, he was a rebellious sort of folk. And when one day he was moving a rock with it and was stopped by the State Patrol and told, well, you can't do that without a permit, he lowered the rock in the road and drove off, meaning that nobody could move that. So they had to call him back to get the rock.
To get the rock off the road.
Yes. The purpose of this machine in the fiction, in the myth now, is to provide extra power at the time of launch. In case there's a power failure or a short, the results would be unspeakable for the doctor who would be transported.
So you've got the pictures, excellent pictures by Jim Wildman.
Yes.
A very fine Madison photographer. And he's also sort of gotten caught up in modifying machinery for different purposes, as he leads the bubble machine in the parade, which kicks off the Willie Street Fair, I believe.
He certainly does. It's a pretty famous machine around Madison here. I think he has remodeled it now. He's going to be using a newer version of vintage Cadillac this year, I understand. Jim did a wonderful job with the photographs. I partnered with him early because I realized we would have to document this work very carefully. He took well over 1,000 photographs. Tom's son Thayer lifted him up in the crane 70 feet above the park to take aerial photos and set him down gently again, which everyone was grateful for. He did a fabulous job, and it's one of the reasons that the color insert is in the book. The publisher was very impressed with the quality of the photos.
Yeah, and I am too. And you will be too once you get a chance to read this book. We're talking today with Tom Kupch, who is from Cazenovia, Wisconsin. He's written about Tom Every, the great metal artist, otherwise known as Dr. Evermore. The book is called A Mythic Obsession, The World of Dr. Evermore, published by Chicago Review Press. We've got calls coming in, and we'll get to them in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us this morning as we talk about the world of Dr. Evermore with Tom Kupch. And his new book is out, a fine book with wonderful pictures. And you had close access to Tom and to his wife, Eleanor.
I certainly did. They allowed me, and they allowed Jim Wildman also, to go through their personal photographs and their photographic collection, many of the documents about their life together, even Tom's report card from seventh grade. I was always very grateful for that. They were very cooperative and have been just thrilled with the book.
Mm-hmm. Lots of drawings by Tom of the things that he imagines from the materials that he's looking at.
That's right. Tom, after 2004, he had suffered a stroke, his second or perhaps his third stroke in 2004, could not work in metal as much. So he spent a lot of his time drawing his ideas. He has since been able, with the help of a new welding machine, which Eleanor purchased for him, and Thayer's modification of it, work at a table where he can wheel himself up under, and with other people's help, he can continue to create.
Great. All right, let's take some calls, and there's a line open for you in case you have a question, 263-1890 in Madison, or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's start off with Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I grew up in Crestwood, which is next-door neighbor to Highlands, and I spent a lot of time in the Highlands, had a lot of friends there. And you mentioned that that Tom and Eleanor lived in the Highlands, in the largest house in the Highlands. And I'm wondering, was it the Davis Mansion or was it the Norman Castle?
It was the Davis Mansion.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. And they called it Edenfred, or Peace of Eden, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Let's see what else. A 32-room mansion that he bought for $125,000 instead of demolishing it as they thought that he would have to.
That's right. They invited him in because he was a demolition person, a salvager, to demolish the house, and he offered $125,000.
Which was pretty good money in that time in 72.
I would think it would be considerable money.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved in and lived there in their dream house for about a decade.
Let's go to Jeff next in Madison. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, guys. About a dozen years ago, Dr. Evermore showed me a drawing he had made of one of the many whimsical ideas he had of a submarine with about 30-foot wheels on the side and then bridge supports welded to the top in a big arch, and it was going to be like 50 feet tall, and there were going to be sails on it. He actually bought the submarine in Louisiana, and it was being shipped up. Do we have any idea? Did it ever make it this far or anything?
The submarine never made it up here. I don't know that he bought it. He may have put a deposit down on it and intended to go pick it up. But as far as I know, and I did ask him about this, he doesn't know the whereabouts of that submarine.
I lost a submarine.
Well, only Tom could lose a submarine. God knows what else is out there that he's lost. I think the thing you were referring to was a sculpture he had proposed when there was briefly a proposal for him to move all of his work up to the Kohler Foundation. He called it the Air Fantasy, and it was to be about a 60-foot-high balloon. There would be sails on it. He incorporated a submarine in the front, and it was actually on wheels. So he thought that this work of art, which would have been very, very big, covered all phases of transportation. In other words, air, land, and sea.
Excellent. You might mention Jim Delaney in this just because of
sure.
The park is now. And thank you for having this program. Tom is such a wonderful person. Everyone should meet him.
That's right.
Jeff, thanks very much for the call. Jim Delaney, Delaney Surplus Sales at Baraboo. Talk about him.
Yes. The sculpture site is actually on the property of Jim Delaney, the Delaney Surplus, which is directly across from the old Badger Ordnance Plant on Highway 12. It's midway between Sauk City and Baraboo. Jim has allowed Tom to work and to exhibit on his property for about 30 years now, has accommodated him with a security fence, and has made a wonderful contribution to the arts. He's a great guy. I interviewed him for the book, and Delaney's is just a wonderful place to visit anyway.
Much surplus to be found there.
Indeed.
Let's go back to the phones, and if you have a question or comment, we've got a line open for you in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. And let's go to Heidi next in Michigan. Hello, Heidi.
Heidi, yeah. I'm on my way to Minnesota. I'm from Michigan. I'm an art teacher there in Morenci, Michigan, and my daughter's going to college, and I decided that on the way back to fight some tears, we'd do a little sightseeing and got on some unusual places to find in Wisconsin, and this came up, and so I'm so excited to hear your show today. I got to meet Tyree Guyton a few months ago, who's responsible for the Heidelberg Project in Detroit, which also uses garbage, if you will. And I'm believing that Dr. Evermore's site's going to be a little bit more refined in its art. But I'm looking forward to getting up there and being inspired, because I use a lot of found objects in my work, too, with my students. But as I'm listening to your story, it sounds very curious to me and reminds me of a movie called Never Was that had Nick Nolte in it. And I would love to hear your comment about that, and if you've seen it. And also, what do you think I might be inspired by when I get up there? And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Well, I'm not familiar with the movie Never Was, but I will tell you this about visiting the site as an artist. Repeatedly, I hear from artists how they are inspired by the volume of work and by the friendliness of this man and by talking to him. So I think what you take from the site is what you bring to the site, actually. But I know that you will be absolutely thrilled with it. Now, it isn't open on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so you have to schedule yourself accordingly, Thursday through Monday. Afternoons are best.
And there's an event coming up on 20th September, which is Tom's 70th birthday. Tell us about that.
Well, we all intend to kind of get together up there. It's always a casual environment, and everyone is invited to come up to the sculpture site. Wish Tom well. We'll sign books if you have them. Eleanor does have a supply of books up there. You could perhaps purchase one there. We just want to pay tribute to him and present this book to the public at that time.
Let's pay some tribute to Eleanor as well. She has been married to him for 40-some years. I believe she may have filed for divorce at some time. Are they divorced but still close?
They are divorced. They still work together.
They still
have major
together.
Differences in their relationship, of course. But she does the business end of things up there under the title of Meta Happenings, which is something Tom derived from metal happenings. She's always there. She's the backbone of the business organization there, always ready to accommodate people and talk about Tom's work.
And when this teacher goes there, she's going to find the most fascinating sculptures, indescribable. Tycho's telescope, the Faraday stray voltage cage, all tied into the story, and a number of birds that wander the grounds that will witness this send-off to the heavens when Dr. Evermore leaves.
That's right. Tom began making birds in the 90s, partly through inspiration of his son, Troy, whom he worked with briefly in the 90s. He feels birds are a non-threatening sort of thing, the way he describes it, and it seems to him to be inconsistent to make them out of something so heavy when they're actually light. They're the most whimsical creations you could hope to find.
Let's go to Amos next in Sauk County. Hello, Amos. What's
Hi,
on
Jim.
Your mind?
Yes. Actually, I thought of one other thing I was going to say about them. I wanted to say something about Eleanor, but, you know, they were trying to get part of that badge ordinance. I think it was just a crime that there wasn't a permanent park. You know, it's like this, you know, people don't appreciate the kind of genius in their backyard until the people die, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, gee, we had this raving genius, and you know, Evermore stuff is fabulous, and you just don't know Wisconsin until you've gone to that park. And I don't know him very well, but, you know, Tom, the first time I met him, he's just, like the guy just right away. I mean, he's just a wonderful person. And I was talking to Eleanor once, I think it was the late 80s, where she was painting some of his small, the small critters, and just absolutely fantastic paint jobs on them at that time. I kicked myself for not having bought any. But she was telling me about how the kids, there's a trailer park that's kind of next door, and they got vandalized with teenagers that came over and trashed the place, and the cops caught them and wanted to prosecute, and Eleanor said, no, we're not going to do that, and she told them to bring the boys over, and she took them for a tour on what they were doing and showed them everything they're doing. And, you know, of course, they never had a problem since then.
Yeah.
And I think that, that just kind of indicates the kind of people that, you know, that Eleanor was. And I think Tom strikes me as the same kind of person.
Yeah, both Eleanor and Tom want it to be a really positive place and really enjoy having school groups up there who really are thrilled with it. And it seems like younger people, by and large, really understand this intuitively.
Thanks a lot, Amos. Appreciate your comment. There are other people who come in contact with Dr. Evermore that sort of fall under his spell and start welding along with him. Talk about a couple of the people who you've named in the book.
One of the people who kind of fell under his spell, as you say, or became his apprentice, was Erika Koivunen, who is a local sculptor here in Madison, has pieces now around town, and worked with him and against him at times, I'm sure she would say, creating a number of very large works, including working on the Dreamkeepers, which are the giant birds over on Patterson Street here in Madison.
Mm-hmm. That was an interesting story because they were commissioned by Don Warren, Plumbing and Heating, or Warren Heating, I guess, more than that, who was fascinated with the work that that Tom was doing and wanted him to do a couple of major birds for him.
That's right. He commissioned the birds, and Tom did a drawing, and he had a deposit, and he proceeded. And things went along, and I'm sure people reading Chapter 8 will understand the entire story from there, but this is a narrative that really exposes some of the mind work of Tom. In short, I guess the best summary of it was the one Doug Moe gave in his column a couple of months ago when he interviewed me for this book. He said Tom was not the first person to fall in love with his own work, and it turned out he just couldn't part with it. And eventually it sadly had to go to court and so forth. And it makes, I think, a good story.
It does make a good story. And the birds now reside in Madison and not where they were created. And I see them every day as I drive down Williamson Street and look over. You can't help but notice these birds.
They more or less preside there.
Mm-hmm. They do indeed. Amos, thanks very much for your call. And if you have a question or a comment about Tom Every, otherwise known as Dr. Evermore, then you can call us in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Herb in Middleton. Hello, Herb.
Yeah, the name here is Norb. I have a side light on the Melantine Wrecker.
Ah.
Tom was a collector, and he collected Albert's stuff.
Yes.
He learned that I had a little pickup truck that Albert had built out of about 17 different parts, including a diesel engine. And subsequently, he acquired the Melantine Wrecker mm-hmm. by way of Tom Every, I think, or by way of Jim Delaney, I guess, who bought it from Hilda.
Yes.
After I had demonstrated it, Albert's thesis was, if you aren't smart enough to figure it out, you aren't smart enough to run it. Well, it didn't hurt being an electrical engineer.
Yes.
And subsequently, Tom and Eleanor, I think, exerted their charm, and they got me and a colleague of mine to come out there and to thoroughly analyze and prepare a circuit diagram for the Melantine Wrecker, which, of course, is still sitting there along with the pickup truck.
Yes, it is.
There's a parallel to the Rock on a Road story. It has to do with scrap iron on the Sauk County Bridge story. Apparently, Albert had salvaged some scrap from a previous bridge, had picked it up, and set it down on the Sauk County Bridge in preparatory to hauling it away. And a local officer told him that he would have to give him a ticket, whereupon, of course, he set it down. And he said, now, are we going to write ticket or are we going to move scrap iron? So that was one more sidelight. On those two personalities, they were both their own free spirit, and I just have fond memories of both of them.
All right. Norb, thank you very much for that recollection.
Actually, Tom came into the Melantine through Jim Delaney, who Tom traded 1,100 sheets of plywood in those days for the Melantine. And he had the Melantine for a few years, and he ran out of funds, so he had an auction. And he sold the Melantine and lost track of it. He found it subsequently up in Toma in a salvage yard with a tree growing through it. and worked a deal to get it back, cut the tree out of it, and moved it back down to the park where it resides now.
Isn't that phenomenal? We're talking with Tom Kupch of Cazenovia, Wisconsin. He's written a really fine account of the life of the great metal artist Tom Every, known otherwise as Dr. Evermore. It's called A Mythic Obsession, The World of Dr. Evermore, published by Chicago Review Press. And Tom Every has created literally hundreds of whimsical welded sculptures, and some of them can be seen at the sculpture site, which is located outside of Baraboo, next to Delaney's Surplus Sales on Highway 12. And there you've got this 300-ton creation known as the Forevertron, and you've got some great photos that illustrate this from several angles. It's been certified by the Guinness Book of Records as the largest scrap metal sculpture in the world. Is that true?
It was at one time. It has since been displaced by a very large sculpture somewhere out in the Dakotas, which is not as complex as this, but is larger in dimension.
Hmm. Well, I see that Tom's got some work to do then.
I guess he does, and he has the energy for it. He is working now.
And are there other welders working on site along with him, or is this pretty much now a lonely labor going on?
He has had assistants in the past, but recently he's been working alone. And if he does have an assistant, it's more or less someone who would hold the material for him or get things for him, bring it to the table. But he has had assistance in the past.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you showed him, Dr. Evermore, the manuscript for the book, what was his take on this?
I had actually read chapters of it to him for fact-checking and so forth, but had never shown him the entire manuscript until it was in book form. And when it was published in June, I immediately drove up there with a couple of copies and signed them for both of them. Tom was absolutely thrilled with it, and Eleanor, of course, was in tears and very glad that this all of this happened before Tom would get in some health problem or pass away. So they were very excited about it, still are, and are the biggest promoters of this book around.
When did you decide to write this book?
Back in 2004, I was looking for a writing project, and thought about Tom because I hadn't seen him in so many years and knew that he was doing some weird sculptures somewhere up near Baraboo. And I drove up there and sat down, and we started to talk. And I realized that this was really a multidimensional place and person. So I began to show up with a tape recorder, and we kind of moved on from there. They suggested other people I might like to talk to, and I began to develop a manuscript out of it.
And then 3 years or so later, why the manuscript is finished.
That's right.
What's next?
Next is a biography of somebody who is in the story. It's Alex Jordan. I'm beginning research on that now and hope to complete that in a couple of years.
Is Alex Jordan still alive?
No, Alex passed away in 1989. Yes.
And the House of the Rock, has it grown since he died, or is it now pretty much the same?
Many of the collections and so forth at the House on the Rock remain the same as they were when he passed away. We're actually, and I'm the creative consultant out there now, we're actually undergoing now a major facelift on the public parts that don't have to do with the collections. It's a remodel that's going to be completed in 2010. Which is the 50th anniversary of the selling of the first ticket out there. So, yes, the tradition continues out there.
And the inspiration for House on the Rock in the first place, what made Alex Jordan decide to put this project together?
I guess Alex was one of the most creative people I've ever known. And one thing led to another. He started picnicking out on that rock, and then decided to do a kind of a Frank Lloyd Wright-inspired structure there, and then charge admission, and he had no other interests but that. So he turned the admission around into music machines and collections, and it became a vast, vast operation.
Well, it certainly is that, and I just have to tell you, I've enjoyed the book immensely. People have told me about Dr. Evermore in the past, and so I'm happy to finally have that story told and to be able to see, and the great photographs that illustrate the book are wonderful. It's a biography called A Mythic Obsession, The World of Dr. Evermore. It's published by Chicago Review Press. You can get more on that at www.crp.com.
Yes, I believe it is.
Or Independent Press, I think, is probably.
I think it's IPG.
IPG.
Yes.
Yes. .com. So thanks very much, Tom, for being with us today. It's been enjoyable.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
It's been a real pleasure. So we'll look forward to his next book. Tom Kupch of Casanova, Wisconsin's book is A Mythic Obsession, The World of Dr. Evermore. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks to Martinez White for on-air phone production. And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.